Her name is Caroline C. Cannot wait to hear your story. Come on up.
Hi, everybody. My name is Carolyn, and I am an alcoholic.
Hey, Carolyn.
By the grace of God and the recovery program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I have not had a drink since February the 9th, 1984. Quick math, that's 41.
Wow.
My home group is the Clarkson 12-step group. I was 4 years old when I got sober. I was thinking about that on the way up here because I start figuring out dates and times and all that kind of stuff sometimes when it's time to tell my story. And I was thinking, I can't say that, 41. I'm 67. I'm 25. I should have been here when I was 20. So I'm just like many other people. I needed to get here maybe a little bit sooner, but I got here when I got here. That's what mattered. Some of you guys I've talked to, I know you from being around in this area as well as I grew up in this area. So I'm going to tell some stories that are actually very close to this clubhouse. My first drink was at a bar called Pogo's that was a disco right up there at Northeast Plaza. You take a left out of here, you take a left of Memorial Drive, and there was Pogo's. And that was a discotheque in 1976. And it was 2 years before my 18th birthday. I had not been around alcohol. I'm so naive that it's going to be scary, this stuff I tell you. But it's just like, I was real naive. My parents didn't drink. I went to the Baptist church up here. I just wasn't around alcohol. I wasn't allowed to sell Girl Scout cookies to the people next door because my parents said they were sick. And I did go anyway, and I know that they were ill with this disease. My first drink was when my best buds, it was 49 years ago around this time, my best buds from church came home from college. They came to my house. We got a fake ID. You could type them and laminate them right there at your house. And I said, I can't go. I'm not old enough. And they brought me an ID, and I got all dressed up, and I got in the car with these preacher's daughter and two other of my friends, and we went on our way to Pogo's. I had no idea what was going to be happening. We stopped at Green's. What's that name of all the liquor stores? We stopped at Green's and got me my first drink. And we went in, and we got a bottle of Seagram 7 and a can of 7-Up. And then we went into like a McDonald's and got four tumblers of ice about this big. And my friends poured me my first drink. And it was this much Seagram 7 and this much 7-Up. They said, put a straw in it, you'll get drunk faster. And I took my first sip and I went, this is terrible. And they said, don't worry, it'll get better. As I kept putting 7-Up in there, I was like, man, this is great. Oh, I forgot to tell you, I had a cast on my leg. I had just broken my leg in a basketball tournament. So I had back when those plaster casts, like from my hip all the way down. So when I went into the bar, everybody was fascinated that I could still dance with this broken leg. But I went into the bar, I saw people that were older than I was. The drinking age, I was 18. So people that were older than me, like my brother's friends and stuff, people from high school, they were like, are you drinking? Carolyn, are you drinking? I'm like, yeah. And I said, well, what are you drinking? And they would tell their different drinks. Oh, that's a Black Russian. That's a White Russian. I go, let me try that. Well, it wasn't long before I was in the bathroom, and you know what's happening, right? I'm out on the dance floor, and it's like, help me. And my best buddies, we went into the ladies' room, and I was so sick. And then they took me home, and I don't remember that being a deterrent. It's like, when are we going to do this again? They came back 3 months later, spring break. We got a case of beer, a pack of cigars and a deck of cards, and we went and pitched a tent out in the middle of a horse pasture, drank beer, smoked cigars. Next thing I know, I'm out in the woods throwing up. I asked my friends, what's the deal? Because before they told me it was a combination of drinks. This time, they said it was the cigars. And then the third time, I didn't get drunk. I remember having a beer with somebody down at Georgia Tech, and that was it, and I started college. Well, I took full advantage of college. In fact, I told you that I went up here to the nightclub. Let's fast forward 3 years. My mother is driving me down this road. She's driving me because I've already lost my driver's license. And she's taking me up here to do an internship. And when we were going down this road, I asked my mom, I said, Mom, what is that right there? I'm pointing at NABA. What is that right there? And she goes, honey, that's where the alcoholics go. And do you know, I actually made amends in here one time because I used to tell my friends when I was getting in trouble for alcohol all throughout college and stuff. I said, when I went to there, they wouldn't let me in. I was too young. I just made that up. I mean, I lied about this place just because my mom said this is where they went. Actually, when I got my 3 DUIs, the judge told me, he said, Carolyn, you're an alcoholic and a menace to society. Give your dad your driver's license. You were not allowed to drive. Those two judges ended up being wonderful members of this fellowship and members of NABBA. I'm not sure if I should say that because of the tape, but you don't know who it is.
Yeah.
But I'm here to tell you that they did some marvelous work, and some of the work was requiring those letters and getting people in here, you know, to try to at least see this thing. I didn't know what Alcoholics Anonymous was. I didn't need it. I wasn't trying to quit yet, but I was trying to control it. Right away, I was trying to control it. I knew that when friends would say, hey, let's go do this, and then we're going to drink, or let's drink, and then we're going to do this, I'd be like, what are we going to do first? What are we going to do? What's the order? Because I knew if I started drinking, I couldn't predict what was going to happen. That was within the first 2 years of my drinking. And I remember one time I took a class in school, and it was a physiology class, and we had to tinkle in a cup and like leave it up there. You know how when you tinkle in a cup and you leave it in front of class? You know which one's yours, right? You do. You haven't lost it, anything. And the professor went over here and randomly picked up mine, started to run an experiment on it, and said, has this person been drinking? I dropped the class. It was required, so I did have to take it that summer at 8 in the morning. But little things like that were happening all the time. And I took a class on, it was called Therapeutic Recreation, and they gave us a handout, and they said, you know, checklist for alcohol. We covered alcohol in one of the classes. And the first two, I had all the points you could get, twice the score of what you could get, because it says, have you ever been arrested, and is anybody concerned about your drinking? Because my mother was so concerned about my drinking. My dad just thought I made bad choices because I would drive a car. But my mother she lost it. And what I didn't know was my grandmother was an alcoholic. My grandmother and my grandfather were alcoholics, so my parents chose not to drink. My mother married my dad with the assignment, we're not drinking. You know, so I didn't know. We tell people now about some family history, but I had no idea. I'm not saying, but I was gone at the very beginning with my alcoholism. So I don't want to tell all my story because it's not. I mean, it's great, but I got 41 years of sobriety. Let me tell you, I got stories in sobriety that you wouldn't believe. So I'm going to tell you those. So I moved after I got finished at Georgia State. I moved to Hattiesburg, Mississippi, and I went to the University of Southern Mississippi, and I was going to stop drinking. Now, I was a recreation major. That's the only reason I even passed college, is because I remember my GPA was 2.67, but so was my blood alcohol on my third DUI. I mean, I was like, you got to be kidding me. Those numbers, how can they be matching? But I got down to Hattiesburg, and I was going to be grown, right? I'm 22, 23 years old. I'm going to be grown. I'm not going to do this. Well, it wasn't long before I was drinking the guys under the table that I worked with. I was getting in trouble. I was getting everybody in trouble. But luckily, we had a guy. I took a class, an alcohol class in grad school, and we had the alcoholic come talk. And he came to class, and he said, my name is Bill, and I'm an alcoholic. He said, I hate myself. I tried to kill myself. I had a gun. I spun it. And I thought, if I ever meet anybody like that, I will help them. You know, and he passed out the 12 steps. Well, we were supposed to keep all of our handouts together, and he didn't have enough, so I didn't get one. And so when the professor said, hey, did everybody get a copy? I said, no, I didn't. And they'd go, half the class went, here! Because I thought it was okay, because I was drinking in the afternoon watching my soap operas and then going to class at night. And people said, have you been drinking? I said, well, yeah, it's an alcohol class. And you know, I just thought I was still having a great time, but I was trying to control it. I did not really want to be completely out of control every time. So then I graduate, and I get my first job. I'm working at a college in Louisiana, in Shreveport, Louisiana, and I'm sure I'm grown now. I am so sure that I'm going to be so careful. And it was not long. Well, I think it was the first week that we had a champagne brunch, and everybody had champagne glasses. There was this fountain, and we were supposed to. And I wasn't going to do it, but my vice president was like, come on, you drink. Oh, I had in my job interview for that job, I remember I drove up to Louisiana for my job interview, and they took me out, and they offered me a drink. And I said no, because I know you don't drink during a job interview. But I was like, I was terrified. You know, I got up, and I went to the bathroom. I came back, and they had a drink sitting there for me. And I was scared because I didn't know what was going to happen. And they said, come on, come on, come on. So I tightened my lips and pretended like I drank that. And then I went to the bathroom and poured it out and filled it with water and pretended like I was drinking. But that little bit terrified me enough. And I remember the guy that ends up hiring me, he said, why didn't you want to drink or whatever? You do drink, don't you? And I said, well, I do, you know. I mean, and he was like, it's okay. We all drink, you know, you can drink. So I got the job, and that's all we did at that college, let me tell you. One of the LSU branches, of course, and I was off in the races again, and I was trying to control it, and wasn't doing a real good job. I thought people didn't really know, but I know people did know. I wasn't a daily drinker. I couldn't be a daily drinker because I was such a hard binge drinker that it would take me a couple of days to recover. So I never looked at this like, oh, I can't be an alcoholic because, you know, I don't drink every day. I just couldn't drink every day. Probably my blood alcohol was still high enough that it didn't matter. But I'm at the campus working, and I'm drinking at the end of the evening with the security guard. We're finishing off all the kegs at an event and stuff, but I'm not drinking during the events, but I'm there when they're cleaning up, finishing it off. So I actually went to the bowling alley to pick up some scores because I'm the recreation coordinator. And while I was there, I was drinking some beer with the guys and everything. I went out and I totaled my car 3 feet from where it was parked. My parents made me buy this car because I'd already totaled the last one. Y'all know, what's the name of it? It's called Northlake Parkway now, but it used to be called Coolidge. And between Largeway Highway and La Vista, that was the most dangerous intersection in Atlanta at the time. And I was driving on that for my third DUI. And I was crossing the center line in a blackout, and my friend in the car was pulling him, and I drove us off that embankment, that one down there. And I landed in a bed of kudzu. My car was pinched in. We climbed out, and they took me to jail. You know, each time I got pulled over, and I know that's privilege or whatever, but that's what they were doing. Most people, they were just taking them home. I ended up going to jail. I don't have a record because of the people that helped. Oh, I towed this car 3 feet from where it was parked. Some students gave me a ride home. The next day, the man who owned the property called the school and said, is Carolyn okay? Because he saw my car wrapped around this concrete thing. And I said, I'm fine. And I'm not going to finish that story because that will be just me telling a story about it. But the students did bring that car back to campus, and there was a whole lot of whatever about everybody knowing that I'd been wrecking this car. So I went out and bought a brand-new sports car because I had my first job. It's some money. I didn't have any furniture in my car, but I bought a little two-seater Mazda RX-7. I know, it's so cool. So I had this RX-7, and I wasn't going to drink and drive in it. That was why I bought it. I won't drink and drive. Well, I came home for Thanksgiving, and I went out with a few of my sorority sisters, had two drinks. I didn't get drunk every single time, but I could probably count on my hands how many times I didn't get drunk. I don't know why, but I went out, had a drink. My dad met me at the door. He said, I thought you weren't going to drink and drive in this car. Every time the phone rings, we think it's Louisiana State Patrol calling us to tell us that you killed somebody. It looks so sad. And he actually had a little tear. And so the next night, my mom plans an intervention. And my mom had been watching Phil Donahue, because that's the person who educated everybody on daytime TV. And he said, you just got to get them to admit it. You know, everybody always thought, just get them to admit it. They just got to admit it. And so my mom, the next day, my mom said, honey, will you come in the living room? And when I went in the living room, there was my grandmother and my granddad. And my grandmother told me her story. And her story was not good. She was a locked-in alcoholic. My mother put bread and milk on their doorsteps. We didn't know where she was when I was born. It was a bad story. But she said, I'm just like her. So she said, you're just like me. She said, just admit you're an alcoholic. And so even though I'd said it before, not meaning it, but joking, I said, I'm an alcoholic. And my mother was like, oh, thank God. Now, a friend of mine was there with me from Louisiana, and we were driving home, and she said, wow, what about that story about your grandmother? I said, I know. I said, now I'm only going to drink beer. And I did the beer, you know, across the Alabama line, It was a Sunday. I went up. They wouldn't sell me beer because it was, and I threw a fit. I mean, finally the person said, look, just drive around back. I mean, I think they thought, I was going to call the mental institution because I remember just throwing a fit and driving home and trying to stop again and keep cutting down. Well, I made a New Year's resolution that I wasn't going to drink. For some reason, I made a New Year's resolution that I was going to stop. And I made it till February the 9th. February, till Super Bowl Sunday of February. Because that's the last time I drank was Super Bowl Sunday, 1984. And it was not good. You know, it was one of those things where you're in one place, then you're in another place, then you're in another place. You don't know any of these people. They've taken you to the store because you're hungry. No, I don't do drugs. Yes, you do drugs with us. I'm like, oh, okay, what? When I got home, I was violently ill. And I was scared because I really had tried on my own for 5 years to quit. Well, I'm telling you, I was kind of controlling. I really was quitting. I was saying, I'm quitting, and I couldn't do it. The campus minister and I were buddies, and so when I saw him the next week, I went to him and I said, Skip, I'm an alcoholic and I need help. And he wasn't surprised. I thought he was going to be, what? Yeah, everybody, when you tell him, what? You got to be kidding me. He was like, okay. And then he told me I needed to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. And that was the first time somebody had said that. And I thought, okay, because actually the security guard had quit drinking in November that I used to drink with, and she wasn't drinking, and I didn't know why and how she was doing it. Because I'd see her, and I knew she wasn't drinking, but I was like, I don't know how you do this. And I actually said to her one time, either you're not an alcoholic like me or you go to AA. And I don't even know why I said that, because I'd seen a commercial with a cupcake and a candle in it. And she just smiled and walked away. But that night when Skip told me, that day, I said, well, I know somebody. I know Sarah. You know, right away, Buck ran and didn't know anything. But I said, I know somebody. And that night I waited on campus until she started her midnight shift. And it feels like I just jumped out of the bushes. And I said, Sarah, I'm an alcoholic and I need help. And she goes, okay, hang on just a minute. Come with me. And so we went to her car, and she got out a stack of books about like this. And I went, okay, I can read those. Then we went into the dining hall on campus, and she cut all the lights on. I mean, she got keys to everything. Cut all the lights on. We sat down, and she went to a payphone and made a phone call. By then, it was like 2, 3 o'clock in the morning. And I thought, who are you calling? She said, I had to call my sponsor. Within that much time, her sponsor was there. And her sponsor came walking in and sat between the two of us and pushed us apart like this and said, you can go to your first meeting together after that. No, you got to do your own thing. You got to find your own meetings, go to your own meetings. If you end up somewhere, it's fine. But she asked me questions and she said, do you have insurance? I'm like, I got whatever she's got. And I was willing to go into treatment. That alone tells you that I wanted help. You know, I didn't fight this thing. And in regards to that, I started my recovery in Shreveport, Louisiana. My first meeting was the Highland Club, the Promises group on a Friday night, and they talked about the promises. And that is when I took step two. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous with part 1A. Okay? I had 1A. Let me tell you, 1A is more important than 1B when you come in. 1A is the one chippers. I hate to say it, but we come in powerless. Unfortunately, I would have had a zillion chips if I'd come around this place earlier. But my experience has been, and I don't mean everybody, but my experience has been that if you just come out and your life's unmanageable, or you come in here with that, you can't relate it to the alcohol part. But if you come in here powerless over alcohol, a few months later, my life was unmanageable. I realized it, but I didn't at the time. And I was powerless. I went to the Promises group. The next day, I happened to go to the church that Skip, the minister at school, went to. I remember sitting there. And I remember saying a basic prayer that I was willing to figure out what this God was. Y'all were talking about, I already had a God, but I had pushed this God to the side because I didn't want to be a hypocrite. That was real important. I'm not going to be a hypocrite. That was how I started. So I had 1, 2, 3 pretty quick. And then I was going to meetings. I probably went to 10 to 12 meetings a week for the first 3 years of my sobriety. And when I started missing meetings, people were like, where have you been? They were like looking at me. I'm like, because I went all the time. In my first year of sobriety, I worked the steps with a sponsor. My first sponsor, right away, when we started working on the fourth and fifth steps, she said, oh, you remind me of my daughter. Well, that was over. You know, we were like, I'm telling her anything. She's really nice, but I'm not, we're over, done. And then this wonderful lady, Ginger, came to my meeting, my home group on Monday night, the no-name group, and she said, I take people through the steps the way Dr. Bill did. And when I heard that, I was like, I ran up to her and I said, will you take me through the steps? She says, well, I need you to come over Saturday and see if you're serious. I mean, she was going to interview me. And so I said, please, you know, and so I went to her house and I said, well, I'm on step, you know, I'd done a fourth and a fifth. I had written like a little autobiography, short, and then shared it with somebody that was not my sponsor because, you know, and then I had laced up my cleats and went and played softball. I didn't do the 6-7 or anything. I just went out because it was softball season. And, but with her, I said, okay, I'm on step 6. And she said, all right, then it should be quick. Let's go through it. When did you do step 1? And I had dates. I mean, those were specific steps that I took when I took them. And I said, and I'm on, you know, she said, well, when did you do the 4th step? And I told her. And she said, how did you do it? And I told her. And she goes, we're going to do it the way the book says to do it. And so I sat down at her table and blank. I'm not mad at anybody. By that time, a lot of things are happening. And I'm like, I don't know. And, I mean, I remember her name being first because I was in, she didn't sit there. And I was, you know, but then when it came. It poured. And it poured just like it was supposed to, line by line by line. And then I didn't share it with her. I shared it with her best friend. I don't know why. I was still a little about everything, talking to one person. Then the terrifying thing was 6 and 7. Because by that time I wasn't drinking. And I was afraid that God was going to remove my personality. Because I had such a great personality. And I just felt like it was going to be removed. I did not know what might be removed or not be removed. I still to this day don't say, I don't talk about character defects. It's index of maladjustments. I really don't like to say that there's anything defective about my character. But I did that, and then I was just scared. I was scared because I was afraid that I would drink. And then I never prayed for God to remove the desire to drink. I didn't crave it. But I thought I had to keep remembering it because the scariest part for me was that mental obsession because I never knew it happened. I wanted to not drink, but then I was drinking when I didn't want to be drinking, so I didn't know that part. I was really afraid. And some other things I had to do the first year, I had to drive with a cup between my legs. You know, that's how much drinking and driving I would do. I mean, I couldn't even drive a car without putting a cup between my legs. So I did 6 and 7, and I don't remember exactly how all that happened, but then I made the list, and she made me give her my 4-step, and she went right down the list and put a date by everybody, and there was one on there, and she said, well, when, you know, she's putting dates on it. She says, when are you going to do this one? I said, never. You know, I don't know who that person is, and she's like, right away, you know, ASAP, and the reason I tell you that is I got in a car, and I drove to Maine, and I made direct amends to one of my college roommates. And then I drove over here, and I went to Hattiesburg, and I sat there and saw 3 or 4 different people while I was there. They said direct amends, and that's what they meant. They meant you go there, you call them, you sit there, you talk to them. And I did that, and I can't tell you how that's why these promises are so special, because they really start happening when you're halfway through. You know, you're doing them, and things are happening with your relationships. But I said I would not do this one amends, and in sobriety in the first year, toward the end of my first year, we had a sober softball team, and we drove from Louisiana over to Texas to play in a game. And while we were sitting in the bleachers, I heard this person out in left field, and I went, oh, my God. I could hear her mouth, and I was like, oh, my God. And then I was calling everybody around me, I'm in recovery. I said, see that woman out there? I said, I owe her an amend. She's my only one left, you know? And they were like, oh, my God. I was like, no, I really do. And so I talked to somebody about it. And then as that person was coming off the field at one point, I came around the corner to talk to them. And they wouldn't even get any closer to me than, I don't know. But anyway, so I told her. I said, you know, I'm sorry for my behavior. I don't know if I didn't tell her about alcoholism or anything, but my behavior was horrible. But she was trying to get me fired. I was able to do that. Now, in early sobriety, this would happen a lot. They'd say, Carolyn, this weekend, we're getting in the car, we're going over to Texas. And we'd drive an hour, hour and a half into Texas. We'd go in a little room with about 15, 20 of us, and these two men would sit down, and teach us about the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that was Joe and Charlie. I got sober right where Joe and Charlie were, and so it was nothing. And I didn't know this. I was having this. I didn't know this was special. But also, having been in education, I mean, I like to learn things like that. I need to be taught like that. And I had these, if you don't know who they are, they're kind of famous in AA for being the people who could give all the history and tie it all together and really help you understand all of it. And I saw them regularly, and I'm just so grateful. I was thinking about it when I was sitting back there that I was, you know, going to tell my story, and I remember thinking the first time I told my story, I was so excited. I mean, I couldn't wait. I mean, I know that's so odd for most people. They don't want to get up here at all. But we got to tell our story on our one-year birthday. So I had my one-year birthday was coming up, and right on my one-year birthday, I got hit head-on by a drunk driver. And that little Mark RX-7, bam, was totaled in the middle of an intersection. It was on television. Do you know that I walked out of that? I stepped out of that car and walked out of it and looked back and couldn't believe it. And this is the honest truth. I told you it was a two-seater. I didn't have a back seat. I had no back seat. Your seatbelt goes like this. When that car started crashing all around me in slow motion, I felt a hand, like a real legitimate hand, put on my shoulder to watch this. And I was smoking a cigarette. So I had to put the cigarette out. But I got out, and people who saw the wreck were just like, oh, my God, are you okay? And then I had to go tell my story. So then I was griping a little bit during my story the next day because I was sore, you know. But how grateful I was that, you know, that I got to do that. And then I started telling my story. And I was sponsoring people pretty early in that it was nothing for them to say, get in the car, we're going on a 12-step call. And we went physically to people's houses. We even went and saw our members when they disappeared for a little while. We'd go knock on their doors too. You know, say, hey, where you been? We miss you. We'd go get them and help them. The first 4 years of my sobriety was in Shreveport, Louisiana. Oh, 9 months. We had a treatment center right across the street from the hospital. And in 9 months, I was kind of running out of the student center. And my boss said, hey, Carolyn, where are you going? And I said, oh, I'm going across the street. I'll be right back. I've got a friend in the hospital. He's like, okay. So I went over to an AA meeting. I came back, and then I realized I'd prayed about it. I want to tell my boss. I need to tell him. And so he said, how's your friend? I said, oh, she's doing so much better. And I said, come on. I went in his office, and I looked at him, and I said, I need to say something. He's a hundred friend. I said, well, it was for me. I said, I go sometimes over there because I'm a recovering alcoholic and I haven't had a drink in 9 months. And he said, recovering alcoholic, you know, alcoholic. He goes, I just thought you had emotional problems. I mean, he was so clear about going, I thought you just had emotional problems. Because it all came out as emotional problems, trust me. And he goes, you don't drink at all? And now this is, we still had a lot of alcohol on our campus. I mean, it was nothing for me to leave my office, come back, and a beer be sitting there. The students would do it. I said, he goes, you haven't had anything? I said, no. So I went to meetings. Oh, the service work that I did my first year, we went up to a conference. We went to ARCPAL, and that was the Arkansas Young People's Conference. And we didn't have one in Louisiana. So when we came back from that, a bunch of us got together and for the first couple of years in my sobriety, I helped put on the Young People's Conference in Louisiana. We wouldn't do rotation of service yet because we weren't willing to happen to it the first couple of years, but then it started rotating. So I had that opportunity. I remember I did not want to go to a Young People's meeting because, you know, even though I was 25 years old, I was not a young person. I was grown, remember? And one other funny thing that happened is that I was in a Young People's meeting one night. And I turned around, and this guy was coming through the door, and it was one of the attorney guys that I advised on campus, and I was freaking out. I was like, oh, my goodness. So I ran up to him, and I said, hey, what are you doing here? He said, well, my attorney really thought I should come. And I said, yeah, me too. I'm just kind of checking this out. And everybody was like, what the heck? I pretended like I was a visitor. And everybody was like, what is she doing? So I did crazy things like that. So I leave Louisiana, and I go to Florida State University, down in Tallahassee. That's right, go Noles. And, of course, they did AA wrong. You know, I got to Tallahassee, and it was like, what are y'all doing? Y'all don't know. It was just crazy. They just didn't do it right. They had one phone, and it was answered at a house, and they didn't tell when any other meetings were. I mean, they were ahead. So I went to a lot of meetings, and I'm glad I found my home there. I was a sober Seminole. But the service work that I did there, some old-timers really pulled me to the side and said, do you want to help change this? I said, are you kidding me? Of course I do. They don't know what they're doing here. And I had an opportunity to do some service work where I was intergroup. We got the intergroup started. We got the offices started. We got everything started. And I had a group of people that we all worked together a lot to get this thing going. And I remember there was one guy at the meeting all the time, and he was such an asshole. He made a mess at every meeting. I mean, he was such a jerk, and everybody's like, why don't you just shut him up? Why don't you, you know, throw him out or whatever? And you know what I told them? And this is the truth. I looked at them and I said, because I knew his ethic in this meeting, and that he was doing all the 12-step calls in that community, a lot of them. And I looked at him and I said, you know what? If I go back out, that's who I want to come get me. Because I knew he would. I mean, I never thought about that I would go back out. I'm not saying I didn't. Yeah, luckily, I didn't think about it. And if I did, it was quick not to know that I wasn't. I didn't need to do that. I was unsuccessful, period. But David, I remember thinking, call him. I mean, I would call him in a heartbeat for a 12-step cop. But in a meeting, he was something else. So I go to Tallahassee, and I'm there for a while. I'm there a good while. I told you about working the steps. So then I go to Tallahassee. I did graduate again. What happened? I remember sponsoring a lot of people during that time. I actually, at that point, became an educator on the college campus because they needed someone to talk to students about alcohol. And I was not trained in that, but I had a lifetime of learning. And I started telling my story on the campus. And I remember I would tell my story about 100 times a year to the students. And I talked to the athletic teams. I talked to the fraternities and sororities. And that was what paid for my college to finish that degree. And then I went to work for a nonprofit that actually worked with college students all over the country. So then I had the privilege of traveling this country and looking into the faces of college students and talking to them. And mainly, I wouldn't tell them about being an AA because I couldn't from the stage, obviously. But I did teach them about the difference between abuse and addiction. I had this way of telling my story that I could say, this is what abuse looks like, and this is what addiction looks like. So I'm very, very grateful for that. And actually, when I moved back to Atlanta to take care of my parents, I'd been contacted by Lifetime TV to tell my story. It's a TV movie. I know I didn't tell y'all any great stories that would have been good on TV, but they asked me to tell my story because they wanted a sorority woman whose mom had helped them, and my mom was the one that helped me. So when I moved back to Atlanta in 04 to take care of my parents, my mother was in the hospital with cancer, and they were calling me, and they were saying, we don't want to talk to your parents. Would you ask them some questions? Because I had not really, I mean, I had 20 years of sobriety at this point, but I didn't know really how my drinking affected them. Oh, you're still thinking, okay, yeah, they're scared, they're whatever. And I interviewed my mom, and then she told me, you know, I mean, I remember my mom being super depressed. And then I remember my dad telling me this story. That's how I know about the judges and stuff, because I remember him, and he said he was so mad at the judge for calling me an alcoholic. That didn't happen, which is fine, because my parents were still alive. And also, when I called New York, I didn't figure out a way to do it, and they quit making real-life stories. They started making them up, because nobody died in my story, thank God. Don't get me wrong. People have died in my story since then, recovering people who've gone back out, who did not make it back. I know I know handfuls of people that didn't get a chance to come back. And I have stood in the parking lot. I remember when I was celebrating maybe 25 years of sobriety, I was in the parking lot at Clarkston with four or five people who had 25 years of sobriety, and we looked at each other, and we started talking about it, and we said, you know what? We would not make it back. Our egos and we would not make it back. We looked, and we know who we are, and we said, and I don't mean just from drinking killing me. I'm saying ego and myself. I remember when I was working the steps with my sponsor, Ginger, and we figured things out. She goes, do you know what your problem is? This is when I was doing that four step. She goes, now you really know what your problem is. I said, Oh, yeah. I have low self-esteem. Somehow, that's what everybody's talking about. I have this low self-esteem. And she said, no. You have lack of self-worth. That is lower than low self-esteem. And I don't know if the combination of the behaviors that I'd had and what I did, I don't remember taking a drink and going, cool, I'm different, this is great. I just remember, let's party, you know. But I was able, this program with the God of my understanding, was to have worth. Because I didn't think I had it at the time. I'm trying to think if there's any more just really cool spiritual stories. I need that, you know, it's probably a good thing to finish this thing up, but I appreciate y'all coming in and listening. And please, oh, I know, one of the first things somebody said to me was, you never have to take another drink. I remember when that person, that very first meeting, came across to me and said, you never have to drink again. And I believed her. And then I went to a concert 6 months later, and she was drinking. But I never had to drink again. And y'all don't. Keep coming to this place. Come, keep coming. It's wonderful. I can't tell you how much I love it. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
First I slip, and then I crib to a hope-filled dream. You rescue me. Look into love's window for a soul that's meant for me. Takes me where the promises are real. Sometimes quickly, sometimes slow, we get just what we need. On a broad highway, God wants us, we walk eternally. Where the promises are.